traveled every road in Pennsylvania.
I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. I crossed the valley stair, man, I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere.
Been to Millview, Rockview, Waterloo, Lackawanna, Fairview, Bellevue, Sweet Roots, Susquehanna, Lewisburg, Stroudsburg,
Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, Willisburg, Rock, Flat Rock. It does look like I remember. Yeah. Do you know any of these berries, rowanberry, or these botanicals? Dandelion is,
yeah,
obviously.
Dandelion, yeah.
Is dandelion in the same family as carrots and parsley?
No, those are in the carrot family, but dandelion's in like the daisy sunflower family. Yeah. The bog myrtle is like in the blueberry family.
Oh. So,
yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. So, yeah, welcome to Barn Spring, PA. I have a new guest, Chris Martine.
Hey, hey.
And we're drinking, as we said, Caroon, which is a lovely Scottish gin that brought back this summer. I'm super excited because Chris is, you're probably the biggest celebrity we've ever had on the podcast. You have Plants Are Cool Too.
Yes.
How would people find that on YouTube?
Yeah, you go to YouTube, Plants Are Cool Too. It's a show about plants.
About plants.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, I heard that kind of Mission Impossible style, you were rappelling down a cliff and you rescued a plant that was going to be part of a global conspiracy theory.
That's right. We found a plant that was super rare. That wasn't even supposed to be in the state of Pennsylvania.
Was that on the Shikellamy Bluff?
On the Shikellamy Bluff. We're going to be debuting that. At least its feature film debut is going to be at the Campus Theater in 2 weekends for the Maryland Conservancy 30th anniversary. On the big screen.
Why would it be rare in Pennsylvania? Because it's not the right climate, or because it's just its habitat has been
destroyed? It's a species that was only known from Virginia and West Virginia. And then,
okay, but that's not like saying it's only known in Costa Rica. I mean, those areas are not that different from here, are they?
Yeah, not super different. I mean, that's just the point, right? Is in these particular rocky habitats that just happen to be kind of similar to what's up here. We just have never found the plant on them before.
Do you think, is there any way to determine whether climate changes might, whether man-made or otherwise, might have affected its range?
Well, I wouldn't say that it has up till now, but it could after now, you know.
What's this
so
plant
I think
called?
It was just here for a long time. We just didn't.
Right. Notice. What's it called?
It's called the white alum root. Yeah. Yeah. It's close related.
To say a plant's name is a root, that seems a little weird. It's like saying like.
Well, it has.
You know what I mean?
All
that's
plants
like,
do have roots.
I know. But it's like saying like, you know, it's like calling a mammal like that's the two-footed raccoon. Or I mean.
I guess. But
it
like,
already has feet.
Rowanberry is not just a berry. It's a whole plant, you know.
I mean,
that makes berries.
I'm sure we could spend hours about some of the arbitrariness about colloquial plant naming. Don't get me started on vegetables. What are or aren't vegetables in terms of food? Anyway, let me pull us out of the weeds.
Good one.
We are going to break down the first and probably only actual debate between Jen Rager Kay and Fred Keller, who are both competing, I don't know where that came from. Anyway, they're running to be representative. Fred has been the representative since 2010, I believe. He's a Republican. Jen is first-time candidate, I'm pretty sure, for anything, you know, after high school. She might have been in student government. I know Jen pretty well. She helped to co-found the Hub for Progress with me last year and then decided to run. And in many ways, she's like, I think there are 97 or 98 women running for state house across the state I don't know if they're all first-time candidates, but it's a lot of them are, and she's part of that wave. I mean, in our area, we have Sarah Donnelly, who's running down around Sunbury, southern Northumberland County. Linda Sozniak up around Williamsport. I use her page, who's running in Williamsport. There's Carrie Heath in Tioga County. These are all these people who've stepped forward. And, you know, Jen didn't talk about – she didn't say Trump's name once tonight.
Yeah.
I think the energy for her campaign and her volunteers, you know, comes from that place of like what happened in 2016 and we need to work on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a little background. We didn't even do any show notes, but I think we'll talk a little bit about the context of the debate, just get some general reactions, you know, what each person did well and kind of go from there. How does that sound?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Yeah. Have you ever run for political office, Chris?
No, but I my mother was a local council person for 20 some odd years.
Is this in Jersey?
Yeah, in Jersey. Yeah,
where?
She's in Park Ridge, New Jersey. She's Democratic councilwoman for the first elected woman in my town to
cool.
the council.
Wow.
And served in that role for
awesome.
It must have been 5 terms, probably. But
wow.
I guess that what is that 15 or 20 years?
Huh. Do you know
yeah.
she points
so
to
sort
something?
Grew up around local
right.
politics. You know?
Were you out like handing out flyers and in parades and?
Yeah, Sort of. You know, I was pretty young then, but I remember sort of like hanging around Democratic headquarters as a kid and thinking about, you know, just sort of being part of this, in on the strategy stuff and being there on the night of the election, watching the numbers come in. It was always really exciting.
Did you see Jen's son, Charlie, tonight? He was there. He's like six.
Yeah.
He's a really sweet kid. Yeah. And he's been told he's the assistant campaign manager, which is very important to him.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay, so a little bit of context. You know, Jen, of course, would want to debate Fred like any challenger would. And this is, like, to me, disappointing, but pretty typical. Fred Keller's campaign kind of dissembled and dissimulated. You know, they tried to say, well, we've had two. They tried to say there were debates, but they were just two. This came up tonight. Like, one was a Chamber of Commerce event, and another was, I can't remember the other thing, retired employees, state employees. But, you know, those were two public events where people could ask them questions. It wasn't in any way this kind of format. So, and this was, and so what Fred, I don't know the ins and outs. I'm friends with Jen, but I'm not on her campaign staff. You know, there was going to be a League of Women Voters, what they call Candidates Night, and they had a date picked, and I'm pretty sure, I've double-checked, Fred was going to go and then said he couldn't, but suddenly, whoops, lo and behold, he can do this at the Susquehanna Valley Conservatives Club meeting. So that's a little bit the context. And I will say that, you know, everybody who, all of us who were Jen supporters, we didn't know for sure what it was going to be like. I mean, I didn't know anything about whether they were going to ask the questions. I didn't learn some of that till today. We didn't know if it was going to be open or ticketed. And having been around politics, I don't know if you've ever seen things like this, Chris, but often campaigns try and really control the crowd through ticketing. Have you seen some of those things?
Yeah, this is wide open, though.
It was wide open. Yeah. And I'll say that the Susquehanna Valley Conservatives did a very good job, as far as I could tell. Mm-hmm. You know,
it was standing room only, right? I mean, every seat was taken. There were people standing up in the room out in the hallway.
Yeah, that's right. So
packed house.
Yeah, so... You know, Trump himself may be dangerous for democracy, but his presidency is good for democracy.
Yeah. I mean, it really, and the parking was very quickly overwhelmed right outside the inn. So people had to park, you know, they had to walk to get to the place. And people were not dissuaded by not having a parking spot.
I'm not sure that Monday night is like, well, you know, a lot of people.
Oh, I agree.
Probably not their best night to go out. Yeah, so it was a really great turnout. So Chris was sitting unwittingly on the more Fred Keller Republican side, and I was kind of in the middle, and I didn't realize that the left side, closer to Jen, was almost all her supporters.
Yeah, I didn't either until everybody stood up at the end.
At the end everybody stood up. When that happened, it's, you know, I would guess it was half or a little bit more Jen, at least half, and you agreed with that.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So did you? But you know, these things, you know, we talk. You know, I think we have this kind of myth. We like to say that we're going to debate facts and we're going to be rational. There's a lot of emotion in the room.
Yeah, there was.
You saw some of that.
I was sitting in the middle of a lot of it. You know, I just found that people were doing a lot of head shaking and sort of turning to each other and either laughing or giving each other exasperated looks. And occasionally, you know, there was just a lot of chatter around me.
Yeah.
And, you know, almost predictably so, right? So, you know, if there was any sort of typically hot button issue that sort of came out of either anybody's mouth, particularly when Jen was talking, there was a lot of chatter on my side of the room. People sort of nudging each other and giving each other knowing looks, and and that just sort of got me down over the course of the night.
Yeah,
it just
said
sort
that.
Of felt like it was just had this sort of, there was a little bit more toxic over there. I just felt like there's just no way anybody was gonna listen to what she was actually saying, right?
Yeah.
It was just too easy to say, oh, she just said something about guns. Oh, I'm not listening to that.
Yeah.
As soon as the gun thing came up, everybody started chattering over there. And
oh, interesting.
Not listening to a thing she said. When she said the thing about healthcare, she, you know, said, what's your number one thing? She said, healthcare for all. And the whole place on my side, like, erupted and said, well, there you go. Nobody over here supporting that.
Yeah.
You know,
so and that was the one time that she really seemed to respond to the room, energy in the room that I noticed.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, go ahead, have some more. It's your birthday tomorrow. So, it's a nice sound. I keep waiting to get a sponsor. Maybe Karun will although it's not important in the United States, so unless I build up my Scottish listenership. I think the one time that her side got sort of very kind of vocal was there was a question about Pennsylvania, but basically about whether the fact that Pennsylvania doesn't have any protection for queer people in the workplace. And I think the question was, you know, what do you think about people who might fire someone for being gay? Mm-hmm. She said, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
And the crowd, and
almost,
I was kind of.
And almost just left it at that.
She should have.
I know.
I thought she should have. And then, you know, it's like such a pit hole. You're like, oh, I have 90 seconds. I better go. I was like, no, that was perfect.
Yeah. She said you shouldn't. Keller stood up to take the. Yeah. To take the mic too, he's gonna let it just stand there, and I thought that was nice.
But going back to sort of energy and grumbling and whether people could be convinced. I mean, there was no way I was gonna be convinced to vote for Fred Keller.
Oh right, yeah. So we're.
Well, I wonder. Of course. I bet there were very few on the fence people who are gonna go to the debate.
I agree. But I also was really interested. And I told you on the way here I was listening to conservative talk radio, and I do that because I'm kinda interested in what I keep saying to myself, how is it that people think a certain way or believe a certain thing? And I kinda wanna try to understand it.
Yeah.
And I partly went tonight because I just kinda wanted to know who Fred Keller was and what is he into, right? And as soon as I walked in the door, he came up and shook my hand. And I thought, that guy just introduced himself to me. Like, oh, well, let me listen to what he has to say. You know?
Yeah.
I was willing to listen to him. But I sure felt like the folks that were around me tonight just did not want to hear a thing that Jen had to say. And maybe that was the case on the other side of the room. I just wasn't over there.
Keller was talking. I would love to know if Keller supporters went and talked to Jen and had that. I mean, I shook Fred's hand on the way in. He knows who I am from some of my local activism, and probably because I'm on borough council. And so I wanted to ask you. Did you were curious about sort of how Fred thinks, and you listen to conservative talk radio. I'm rephrasing what you said, but to me it's like you want to understand like their worldview, right? Like I think a lot of us understand that these debates aren't about facts. Facts are just pawns between competing worldviews. Mm-hmm. And so if you really want to reach people who can be convinced, it's maybe about trying to understand their worldview and how the worldview you're presenting, like for example Jen's. Can connect to them. So I'm just curious. Did you feel like there were things that Fred said that gave you insight into how his worldview?
I think to some degree he played it pretty well without saying a lot.
Right? Yeah,
he actually kept talking about how you get what you get, and you know exactly what I think, and you guys all know where I stand on.
Yeah,
this. He never really talked about it.
His opening statement was, "If you want my biography, go to my webpage."
Yeah, and then he sort of played it that way the rest of the time. So, well, you guys know me. You know where I'm from. Well, you know what I think. You know what I believe. And he never really stated too much about it.
Yeah.
I noticed he didn't even in some of his answers. He didn't answer certain questions. Mm-hmm. He didn't really answer the question about LGBTQ.
Well, it was very. I took. I don't have them. If people are interested, if you go to my Facebook feed, I had about 74 comments where I put. So I was basically trying to like live tweet like people do, but I don't have. I don't feel like people in this area are on Twitter, and most of the audience that would care are around here.
Right.
Anyway, so on that one, I was like, I think he said people who have it was something like people who have a different lifestyle, we should accept them, and I was like. I was like, that is the most oblique reference to being gay I've ever heard in my life.
but he was sort of good at not saying words.
I mean,
that he knew would be hot button words. So he's not going to say the phrase LGBT. There's no way he's going to say that.
But he also didn't want to say he basically gave sort of the what's that word pablum or just kind of like sort of not very meaningful little phrases that implied he believes in tolerance.
Right.
And that we should, look after each other. And I think, and I've heard people, I know David Hayne, who ran against Fred in the past, like Fred has been a politician for 10 years, and he's good at hearing what his opponent, in this case, Jen, is saying and trying to co-opt her message. And it's
he did that a bunch, didn't he?
Right? Yeah. Like, he's talking about being a Christian and how we take care of each other. But I think Jen also, I sort of lost the thread of what we were on, but I think... you were saying he didn't say a lot, and I think you could say that sometimes about Jen. I mean, some of her answers were, to me, a little vague and just kind of throwing out like catchphrases.
Mm-hmm.
But that also was effective sometimes. Like she mentioned several times about I'll work hard. We need someone. She'd often say like we need someone who will do this for the Valley, and that's a way to criticize Fred without criticizing Fred. So she's picked that up.
Yeah.
And that is the way the political game is played. I feel like sometimes people get mad and they're like, well, which politician would say what they mean? I mean, the challenge for Fred I'm all over the place here. The challenge for Fred is he wants to tell his base, I'm not really for gay rights, but he doesn't want to alienate the 55 progressives who are in the room.
That's right. And he did that.
Yeah. And he did that.
He did that with the gun question too, because he didn't say the word guns or anything about guns. He cited the bill, the number.
Yeah.
And so you'd only, if you were in the room, knew what bill the moms had HB 2060, right?
The domestic.
He named the bill, but didn't say what it was for.
Yeah.
As a way to show that he is, you know, pro.
I'm so glad
right? And then never said guns.
Right.
And then when it swung back to Jen and she said, well, yeah, long guns, the room was like, what the, you're talking about gun? Like, the people around me were all worked up because suddenly she was talking about guns. They had no idea that's what he had originally started with.
That's such a good insight. Yeah, this is why you have to have two or three people to podcast. like Chris came through like a champ, like a pinch hitter, and because it was a little bit like, I've never done one by myself, and I was like, I could kind of like talk about it, but it's probably gonna suck. But that's a great insight, because I totally missed. I knew what she was talking about.
Yeah.
I knew and so I totally missed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he didn't say guns.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. We were talking a little bit earlier. Like, I think the conservative club, that the Susquehanna Valley Conservative Club, we'll never know, right? Because they didn't. They took questions on index cards, and the League of Women Voters does this too. I wish after the fact they would maybe. I'm asking a lot, but.
Mm-hmm.
Take pictures and publish the cards, or at least say what the distribution of topics was, because we have to trust that they're trustworthy gatekeepers.
Right. I kept wondering what wasn't asked, what questions were in the stack that weren't asked.
Yeah, right? And this is a small thing, but at one point, one of the panelists, Jim Van Persing, who again, mostly I think did a great job, but he was like, this person signed their name, so I'm going to ask their question because I appreciate the transparency. And I was a little bit like, well, we weren't asked to sign our names. Right. If I knew that was getting my, I put my name in my question.
And the question was...
Oh, and
it was nothing.
Wow.
It was...
I don't remember what it was. It wasn't...
There were sort of like four questions that were basically the same. Like
what, how are you different from your opponent? Opponent?
What's the first thing you'll do in office? Like, these are like, if there was a high school debate, this is where these would have been the questions, right?
Well, I will say, though, I like that. I like the what's the first thing you do in office. Uh-huh. I think that's a good question. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I like, the moderator, this guy, Paul Hartman.
Like, you know what? He didn't answer that, actually.
Fred didn't?
He did not say what the first thing he did.
Yeah.
Because Jen did, and it got the whole right side
about
of the room all worked up.
I mean, this was was the last question before the statement.
And then it came back to him, and he didn't actually say the next thing he's going to do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting.
Sort of restated that.
Damn, if Jen had noticed that in her closing, she could have mentioned, like, because she has this thing where Fred's a really nice guy, and he has a lot of experience, but is that enough? And she could have even been like, for example, he didn't say what's the first thing he'd do if he's reelected.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well. I hope she doesn't listen to this, because I know she's self-critical, like anyone, you know, anyone doing this would be. And
is,
yeah. Right? Yeah. So Jen, don't listen to this. I'm wearing my podcast hat. You know, I have to offer up my opinions. I can't pull punches.
Yeah.
Paul Hartman, the moderator. So one thing he did that I liked a lot was about 2/3 of the way he was like, okay, and he reserved 2 or 3 like moderator questions. He was like, what's the topic you want to talk about? 2 minutes. And I thought that was great. I was just like, oh, I wish like networks would do that.
Yeah, right.
You know, like when you watch presidential or Senate debates, they're
the
journalists are usually drive me fucking nuts. They're just so like, well, I know them. I'm a very serious person. I know the most important question. And I'm like, that's not what people want to hear about. So I like that. And then he told some jokes.
The moderator did tell some jokes.
Trying to keep it light.
I thought, and
I liked it.
I told you that I kind of needed it, because I felt like I was, you know, as you said, I ended up on the, what ended up being the wrong side of the room. I had no idea that it had sort of shaken out that way, and I started to feel like I was sort of stuck. I actually felt a little unsafe.
Really?
Yeah, and the jokes helped.
Yeah.
Because I could laugh with everybody around me, and
did they laugh?
For a moment be part of the group.
Yeah, you know? did they like the jokes?
Yeah, they did. But I feel like they kind of know that him, and they were all sort of laughing and shaking their head at the same time. Like, oh yeah, typical.
Yeah, Paul Hartman.
Whatever, Paul. Yeah,
we were saying that he seems like the kind of guy, and he was an older man, you know, I don't know, 60s or something, maybe older, but he seemed like the kind of guy who has a Toastmasters almanac, you know, with like jokes for every occasion. I respect that.
Funny.
It's old school.
My
mother-in-law didn't like them very much. She was sitting next to me, but I thought they were pretty good.
Yeah, I thought his only big thing that, you know, because I sort of felt like, okay, I can respect this guy. He's handling it. He's treating everybody fairly. And then at the end, he got Jen's name wrong. And I thought, Are you kidding me?
Yeah, there were a couple.
Like, that's how you're going to end this, by not even saying her name correctly?
Yeah, know? He did.
He called her Jennifer Rader.
Yeah.
And I said.
And then he was like, and I'm not going to get the other one. She has a hyphenated name.
And then he said, what, did I get that wrong? And didn't correct himself. Just left it there.
The other one that I thought was kind of, like, if I wanted to be the person who was very, very sensitive to these things, there were several things. There was, at the beginning, he was like, yeah, we're going to have a lot of questions. And people were like, oh, we're going to be here till 3 in the morning. He's like, we're going to be here till 3 in the morning. So you might want to call Thelma. And I was like, Thelma? And he goes, you know, your maid. And I was like, oh, boy. Like, yeah.
Well, yeah,
of course. We all have maids.
I initially jumped to, like, him assuming that everybody in the room was a man and their wife was at home.
Yeah, like, oh, that too. Right?
That was my first thought. And I think he recognized that it could have sounded that way. And that's why he said, oh, Thelma's the maid.
So that was his recovery.
Anyway, joking wise, I think he was fine.
I think, let's see, I just want to kind of hit maybe on a couple. This is on my mind, it's something I wanted to bring up. There were a couple of points. There was like one time, and now I'm not going to remember, where I feel like Fred actually had like a pretty good answer. Mm-hmm. And I'm blanking on it. But so now I'm going to jump down his throat.
Yeah.
There were a couple of times where, I know what it was. He might have misrepresented it, but he brought up a letter to the editor that was written by one of Jen's supporters. I think it was Robert Beard, who
I hadn't seen it, but seemed like sort of cherry-picked.
I think he probably cherry-picked, and we'll put this in the show notes if people want to look at it. Yeah. But he did in his letter, I know because I read it, draw a contrast between Fred's background as somebody who worked at Woodmode as a plant manager and Jen's as a physician. And he tried to paint it as, I mean, there were several things about Fred, going back to worldviews in our conversation earlier, there were several moments where he was clearly playing from the very typical Republican playbook of out-of-touch liberals. I mean, his campaign slogan is values from our valley. I'm like, okay, you know. And Jen, one reason she's an effective candidate, she wasn't born in this area, but she's a coal miner's daughter, literally.
Right.
She's a first-generation college student. Yeah. I don't think she said that. She should have mentioned that. All three of her sisters are first-generation college graduates. Her father voted for Trump. I feel like she should talk about that more.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Fred has this, several things from the playbook. Harrisburg is broken. So that was his good moment, was picking on a letter from Jen's supporter that seemed to play into that elitist
disparage.
Draft. Now, I will say Jen working people. Jen pushed back, and she did okay on that.
She did, but it elicited a big response on my side, because the way it sort of came out was, I think she said, at this time, it would be really better to have somebody who's a trained physician
versus a factory
than somebody who's more, said, more apt for faculty. That's the quote. It
didn't come across well.
And it came off as her saying, "This, you don't want that. Why would you want that person?"
And plus,
and the people on my side said, "You just insulted a bunch of people." Somebody actually said, "You just insulted a bunch of people in this room," right? And it was just, it totally got taken as like exactly what Fred had played it as initially.
Yeah, that was not a good moment. Yeah. And I like to do this actually in the podcast. I like to see, how could it have gone differently? Like, I think she could have said, I'm just spitballing here, but like she could have said something like, the letter writer may have misspoken, but here's what I believe. Mm-hmm. All work that people do has a certain dignity, and we should support that, whether you're a factory worker or a physician or a professor.
Mm-hmm.
And my opponent's record does not honor the dignity of all work. He does not support union rights. He does not support increasing minimum wage. He thinks that, how well off you are, how good your life is, whether you work in a factory or any other job, is only about what you do. And no, I should have stopped earlier.
What I think she was going for was, we all have different talents.
Yeah. Right,
we all have different things to offer, and given some of the challenges that she is outlining as part of her campaign,
and she could even say
having a medical background actually is the kind of knowledge that would really work right now for our area, right? Like, and I think that's what she was trying to say.
She was what she was trying to say. And if she had in her back pocket, which is hard to do, the percentage of people who work in healthcare compared to other parts of the economy has been growing.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to pick a representative worker from the 85th district, it's not a factory worker. I just mean in terms of numbers.
Yeah,
it's somebody who works in education or healthcare or prison.
Yeah,
Those are the biggest employers. Right. Fred said Widmo is the biggest employer. I want to check this up. It may be the biggest private employer, but it's not the biggest employer. Yeah. Evan is a big employer. Bucknell, obviously, is a huge employer. Yeah. The federal prison is a big employer. So, yeah. So that was not one of her great moments. I was going to come back to a couple of things. Like, there were two or three times, and I know I'm like, people go, you're biased. I hate that criticism. Everybody's mm-hmm. biased. Nobody's straight down the line. But I try and, like you were saying, understand what somebody's saying, understand Fred's arguments, even if I disagree with them. There were two or three times that he was saying, it was just word mush. Like, at one point, he was like, well, if we raise the minimum wage, you know, it's not really going to help you because you're going to pay more in Social Security, like your payroll taxes. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, that's silly. I mean, if I'm making $12 an hour and it goes to $15 an hour, I'm still making more. It's only a flat rate. You know, yeah. I'm still going to be ahead.
That's talking about the cost to the employer, right?
No, he was saying the employee. That's what I heard. Your argument is the one that normally you would expect a Republican to make. Right. If you raise the minimum wage, you're not going to be able to employ people.
That's what I assumed he was going for. Because the people around me were all shaking their heads.
They were shaking their heads.
And saying, and pay more for products. And products will be more expensive, right? Like, to make up for what you have to pay the employees. Like,
yeah, everybody. That's a typical argument against minimum wage. Right. What I heard him say, and what I heard him say was, you're not really going to have... Because he was responding to Jen. Like,
right.
Jen said... And I think it was smart. I know she's been coached by, not coached, but she's mm-hmm. talked to like Jeff Schneider, who's an economist mm-hmm. at Bucknell, but about this. And she, you know, she's really excited about it. Like, when you raise the minimum wage, you stimulate the economy and you put more money in people's pockets. She said that. I think Fred was trying to respond to that because he was he was trying to say, well, you're not going to have as much money in your pocket as you think because they're going to, you know, you're going to pay all your payroll taxes. And going back to what I'm saying is like, if I make $100 now in my paycheck and 20% is payroll taxes, I have 80. Mm-hmm. If I make 150 and 20% is payroll taxes, that's 30. I'm 120. I have more money. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, doesn't make any sense. And the other one that bugged me, and it came up once or twice, was he likes to run against Harrisburg. And that's, I feel like that's a strange position to be in, because I'm like, mm-hmm. you're in mm-hmm. Harrisburg. How can you run against Harrisburg and you've been part of Harrisburg for 10 years?
Yeah.
And specifically, two things came up. One was the severance tax versus impact fees. And if you're one of our listeners from out of Pennsylvania, or even if you are, this is can get very complicated.
Or me.
Or if you're Chris.
I need to explain.
So here's a quick explanation, okay? And I might get it wrong. But basically, when the natural gas industry started in Pennsylvania, the companies didn't want to pay what's called a severance or an excise tax, which is a flat percentage of the gas that they extract. Mm-hmm. So let's say you extract 1 million cubic feet and you sell it for $1 a foot, so that's $1 million. An excise tax, and I'm making these up a little bit, might be 10%, 8%, so you'd pay $100,000 mm-hmm. based on what you pump or extract, right?
Yep.
And if the well doesn't produce much, you don't pay much tax.
Right.
An impact fee was something that was designed, which has a little bit of good public policy in it, but has mostly been a red herring. An impact mm-hmm. fee says for every well that you create, you have to pay a flat fee. Oh. So if I create 10 wells and the impact fee is like $10,000 per well, did I say 10 wells? That's $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
But the amount I pay per year declines. So it's like the first year it's a big hit and then it goes down.
Mm-hmm.
And what Jen was saying is about, imagine, let's keep this really simple. Imagine there are 10 wells and they produce that 1 million cubic feet of gas. The way it is now, across them,
mm-hmm.
we get $10,000 per well site for $100,000 the first year, and then it's declining. So the second year it's less, the third year it's less, the fourth year it's less. Mm-hmm. And I don't know all the ins and outs, but I can imagine it was designed to squelch or squash political opposition because it does the things they were talking about tonight. It generated money to pay for rail trails and schools and all of that. If you had those 10 wells and they pumped 1 million cubic feet of gas this year at a 10% excise tax, $700,000 this year, if next year they, and the companies have an incentive to get more gas out, of course, and they get a 1.2 million out, the amount that we collect goes up.
Right.
So does that make sense? Is the basic difference?
It does, yeah.
So, and if you're listening and you want to hire me as an educator, you just heard me take a complex topic and explain it very clearly. So on top of that, to me, the ideal thing is to have maybe what should have been a slightly lower. You should still have an impact fee because creating those wells impacts the local community.
Right.
And then you should also have an excise tax.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred got into this thing, first of all, trying to say that like as if they're substitutes for each other. They're not. They can be complements.
Right.
And the other thing at the end, like I thought his closing statement was the most right wing. Like, we have property rights, he was saying. Yeah. And if there's gold under the ground, it's yours.
Well, and if there's gas. More like, and if there's gold on your property, who owns that gold? And people were like, we own it.
Yeah.
You know, everybody, and so he's and like, it was that's
all,
right.
It was all makers.
And if there's gas, who owns that gas? We own that
that's
gas.
Right.
You know, he was,
and it was
just
all,
riling everybody.
That's right. It was all kind of the maker-taker language, right? Yeah. Like, but you didn't even make that goddamn gas. You just got fucking lucky that it was under your land. Regardless, it's such a naive. I mean, honestly, it's naive, and I'm sure I sound like an elitist, but mm-hmm. Fred doesn't really believe that. We don't have absolute property rights anywhere in our society, mm-hmm. really. You know, we all own house. He owns a house. I don't know where he lives. He can't do anything. He can't, you know, run a criminal syndicate out of his house just because it's his property. That's an extreme example. In the borough, you know, I know all about this. We tell people they have to plant trees in front of their house. So as a society, we all almost always to always put limits on what you can do with your property. And on top of that, it's a lot about externalized costs. You know, extracting this gas has impacts on all of us. So it's not just you get to take the gold or gas out of the ground. Of course, I mean, I'm talking to the choir here, I know, but it impacts the environment. And so though, you know, those revenues from impact fees and severance taxes should go to the whole Commonwealth. And then the other piece, this kind of gets to the property rights too, is because he was trying to say, well, it's not the Commonwealth's gas, it's your gas. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm thinking out loud. I mean, where does your property end? Right? Like, yeah. Like, does
how
my
deep in the ground?
Yeah, you know, is there a point on the core of the earth that that's mine?
Right.
Like, and my point is not to be silly, but that these are like legal and social.
Yeah.
Contracts we make with each other, and there's not this sort of absolutism that he's talking about. So anyway, the other thing, so back to but the thing that bugged me about Fred, that's not so deep in the weeds about property theory, is like he was saying like, well, Harrisburg's bad, you know, at the end he was like, Harrisburg has a spending problem, not a revenue problem.
Yeah.
And he kept trying to run against Harrisburg, but like twice he talked about how great it was that he had done two things. One, the impact fees that come to our area.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have no wells in our area,
right?
So the only way that impact fees come here is if it goes to Harrisburg and gets redistributed.
To let us have some of
that's
it,
right.
That's right.
That's right.
That was really he's having it both ways.
He's having it both ways. Yeah. And the other one was
he's having it both ways when he says it's your gas on your property, but the fees are going to build a park in your town whether you like it or not.
Yeah, exactly. Like he's all like it's your gas, you know, but the impact fee, oh, that's okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, exactly. And the other one was the issue about gun violence in schools came up and he was like, oh, you know, well, we found money for schools, 60 million, I can't remember the number, big number, 60 million, could have been 60 billion. So it's been $60 million to study, you know, how to make schools safer. And it had nothing to do with Harrisburg. And I was just sitting there going like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. Of course it came from Harrisburg.
Mm-hmm.
So he's trying to say that like some government spending is bad. I mean, the reality of his behavior is he thinks some government spending is bad, but he runs as if all government spending from Harrisburg is bad. And that's typical. So anyway,
yeah. Playing to the base.
Mm-hmm. So
the format tonight was a question gets asked, one of the candidate gets 1 to 2 minutes to answer, the other person follows up, and then they each had a chance to have 30 seconds to sort of like respond, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what I noticed in my part of the room was that anytime Jen asked to do her 30-second response, mm-hmm. everybody around me mumbled and grumbled and shook their head. I was like, of course, she's got something to say. Right?
Uppity woman.
That's right. And then every time that Fred would ask for the mic, they'd sort of like sit back and go, ooh, here it comes. Oh, here it comes. He's going to smack her down. And it was like totally different on the way they reacted to these responses. They actually started like predicting when she was going to ask for 30 seconds, and they'd sort of look at each other and say, here it comes, like, and she'd do it, and they'd all nudge each other. And
yeah,
so I noticed that as being an issue, and the you know, as sort of, I think, a woman-man kind of contrast.
Yeah.
The other thing I noticed in that vein was a lot of folks around me had a real problem with Jen talking about being a full-time mom and a full-time doctor.
Oh, yeah.
Also being able to be a full-time
I'm
politician.
Glad you brought that up.
And that was something like sort of Fred said, you know, I guess it came back to Jen and they said, do you think you can do that? The question. It came
the
from
question,
the audience, right?
No. I remember this really well. The question came from Nancy Steckel, who's one of the moderators.
Yeah.
And if I were doing opposition research for Fred, this would be one of the things I would go after because she's working full-time. And I think she said publicly, well, she said tonight she plans to keep practicing as a physician while she's a politician.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually thought she handled it really well, but I think that could be a weakness for her. So, what were you going
to
say?
Well, people responded, and I actually do think some of the folks around me were responding to the fact that this is a woman who's claiming she can be a mom and a doctor and also be a politician. And they just sort of said, you know, I heard people say, no, you can't.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do that. You know, you can't. When you say, oh, you're a full-time mom and your son's here right now and he's watching movies, you can't. Yeah. So I thought that she was treated differently by some of the audience around me.
I think she was. And also, I wasn't, because I was really focused on taking my little Facebook comment notes, I didn't. But then my mother-in-law confirmed. At the beginning, the moderator had her go first and then Fred. And at the end, he had her go first and Fred. And normally you would invert it.
Right. Opening statements, closing statements.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. Thank you. Opening and closing.
Yeah. And
is that, does that match with your memory?
It does, actually. So Fred got to essentially have the conclusion statements for the opener.
Twice.
And
that's bullshit. Yeah. I'm just going to call bullshit. Now, maybe it was an honest mistake. And
could have been. And maybe it's just the way that it sort of worked. Because they did go back and forth
with
the question. That I wonder if he was ended that way.
Yeah, maybe. So the other thing that I noticed one time, I might be wrong because, again, I was taking my notes, but it seemed like it was like, you know, it was normally like the question, they each got 1 or 2 minutes and then they could do a rebuttal. And I think I'm one of those. So, it was, for example, it went Jen, Fred, or no, the other way around. It went Fred, Jen. Mm-hmm. So those were the rebuttals were shorter. And then I think Fred was like, can I have some more time? And he gave it to her.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to remember this.
I don't remember.
I took it in my notes. But anyway,
yeah.
If we were to go back and like watch it or whatever, maybe we would notice. So.
Yeah.
So I did my live blogging, as we're calling, even though it's on Facebook. Although I heard once somebody say that Facebook is basically microblogs for the stupid. That might have been Veritune to Thurston, who was the digital. When I was at Bucknell and we did this forum about technology, it was either him or Biz Stone. I can't remember who founded Twitter, but I thought that was pretty funny.
That's funny.
so I'm just glancing at it now. I did put moderator joke pretty good. It was the one about pockets. You don't remember. He was like, liberal, a man goes to a liberal tailor and he's trying to get pants.
And there's only one pocket.
And it was because liberals are always expecting a handout.
That's right, because liberals always have a handout.
Like, there's
not enough pockets for both hands.
Oh, that works. Because in my head, I was like, you can't put both hands in one pocket. Okay. Right. And then it was like, but it's also something, somehow it pivoted to conservatives.
Somebody said, where are all the pockets? And the tailor said, oh, the conservatives are using it to line their own. They already have. Anyway.
I kind of like that.
It's a bipartisan joke.
A little bipartisan joke.
Yeah. And it got a decent laugh.
There was one time when both my mother-in-law and I leaned into each other and we hardly whispered. We were both like, at one point the moderator came in and he was like, you know, back in the good old days in the 1800s, America was all bottom up and it was just the people and it wasn't so top down. And we both were like, no, it wasn't. I mean, senators were appointed by their state legislators. It was like the most elitist thing. And of course, the only people counted were white men. I mean, he could not have possibly walked into a more like Pollyannish view of American history.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. Yeah, people around me were. Well, here's what I noticed about a lot of the folks that were sitting around me is that they would. It didn't matter what Keller said or the moderator said. They nodded in agreement. They said yep, and they looked at each other and nudged each other. I mean, it just he. And so much of it is sort of just, on the way here, I'm listening to Mark Levin on the radio, and he's saying, you know, you elitists can't believe Trump won still, but it's because Trump is what he says he is. He's just a regular guy, talks regular talk. He's, you know, he is what he is. He's honest about his flaws. He just says it like it is, you know.
And such a weird thing.
I noticed all that tonight. Tonight, Keller got up and said it the way it was.
Fred actually is that biography,
even if he
to give him credit.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Like he's just putting it the way it is.
But that is Fred's biography.
Yes.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, it's just. So, and anytime either one of them, because Fred did it 2 or 3 times too, where he kind of got in the weeds on policy and was like calling out bill numbers and names.
Budget figures.
People, some of the folks around were just sort of like zoning out because they did a lot with Jen too.
Yeah.
And then he'd come back with some little snappy thing at the end, you know, and they'd go, oh yeah. They right back in. Like as long as it was sort of in that same Trumpism vein of like, nailing somebody on something, you know?
Yeah.
don't know. I was just...
Yeah. No, that's interesting.
The facts didn't matter a lot. You know?
No, they didn't. Although, Fred especially likes to talk about it, and I've heard him say this before. Like, he's very into, like, well, you know, you should get your facts from a good source. But then, yeah. And to his credit, he often cites Pennsylvania state government sources. But sometimes he'll... I don't remember the exact example, but you know he's using something from a pretty conservative think tank, and he thinks it's just as above reproach. Meanwhile, will criticize things from you know supposedly left leaning think tanks. And to me, it's about the methodology. You know, this came up at one point where Jen was saying something from the Pennsylvania Budget Policy Center, which is one of these think tanks that Fred doesn't like. Mm-hmm. But I know their methodology, and it's very sound. And basically, what they've said is Pennsylvania. Keeps its state budget is less and less of a percentage of our overall economy, right? Mm-hmm. So if the economy of Pennsylvania, I'm making this up, is $14 billion and the state budget is $1.4 billion, it's 10%,
yep.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So Pennsylvania's budget as a proportion of the overall economy is shrinking, which is a pretty good metric for how big is your government.
Right.
Because if you think about the size of the economy, I mean, the government is partly there to help regulate the economy. So if you have a bigger economy, you should have a bigger government. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a bigger NFL, you have more referees. Mm-hmm. You know, when you double the size of the NFL, you don't use the same number of referees. You would have chaos. You'd have bad games. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've been working on using regulation and sports metaphors. Because mm-hmm. No one wants to watch a sports game without refs.
No.
Who wants to watch the economy without good refs?
Not me.
It's not not a sport.
So that's how you're going to explain this. So Jen said...
Jen's,
in the last 4 years...
And she didn't explain it well.
What did she say? In the last four years,
the size of the Pennsylvania budget has gone down.
Right.
And Fred goes, right, he's like, you're crazy.
The budget's gone up. So who'd he turn to in the
Gene
audience?
Yaw, who's their state senator.
Turned to Gene Yaw in the audience and said, Gene, has the budget gone up every year in the last 4 years? And Gene said, yes, it has. And that was it. Everybody around me was like, pfft. See?
Yeah.
She doesn't know what she's talking about, right?
Right. So, and it's interesting, it's interesting the gender thing, too, because I don't mean to impute... malicious intent on those mm-hmm. people, but in general, I think often, you know, people are more likely to think, "Well, a woman messed up, and Fred's a guy, and he's got the facts."
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have the
talking about two different things.
No, they're not. Both things are true. I would need to look it up, but I imagine it's true that if 4 years ago the Pennsylvania budget was, for example, to stick to my made up numbers, $1.4 billion, and maybe now it's $1.6 billion, mm-hmm. but that number, $1.6 billion, in other words, the Pennsylvania budget is growing more slowly than the overall economy.
Gotcha.
And,
yeah.
Oh, I know what I thought was Fred's best point.
Oh, that's just playing with numbers, what he's doing. That's a, you know. Like...
But to be fair to Fred and to Jen, I don't know how well she explained it. And given that, I don't know if he was being disingenuous.
Right.
If she had said very clearly, the size of our budget relative to the size of our economy is smaller, so that it's, you know,
right.
It's 3.8% of the overall economy versus 4.2% as it was 4 years
mm-hmm.
ago.
Mm-hmm.
Then his answer would have been more disingenuous. One of the things I think that Fred did that, this is what frustrates me, is they're, you know, at one level they seem to be having this debate and people in the audience are responding about like the big political philosophy questions, like should government take care of people or does government get in the way?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at several points, the moderator was like, top down never works. I mean, I'm sure he doesn't think that when it's Trump and ICE,
yeah, right.
You know, and like, we've got to have one immigration policy.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, you know, we need to take care of people and Republicans mm-hmm. want to take care of people.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred... You know, Fred, for example, I thought had a good answer about the opioid crisis. We need to not look at this as people's character and we need to treat people.
Yeah, I thought so too.
That's a good answer. Does he think that's also true of black people who were convicted of cocaine and not
right,
opioids?
Right, right, right.
You know, to me, that's the acid test. And I don't
mm-hmm.
know what his answer would be.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the reality is that, like, in some ways, it's like for Fred, the one thing I like that Fred said was like government shouldn't be just like you keep giving money to people. You should have performance metrics, right? So if if we're giving money to like our state parks, now what's the performance metric? I mean,
mm-hmm.
he and I might disagree a lot about that, but if it's number of people in the park, if it's number of people in the park relative to how much we spend,
mm-hmm.
those are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you think about that, if we have, you don't want the government growing faster than the economy and growing slower. I mean, I think for him and for a lot of conservatives, like, well, that's good. It means government's smaller and government always sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the difference. I mean, government doesn't always suck,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so you want better schools. You want better roads. You want, you know, he was all about we stopped the tire burner. But if we were like, we should have a bill that bans tire burners around the state, you'd be like, oh, you don't want to get in the way of business.
Yeah.
So.
It was interesting that he, that was, because one of the questions was what have you done?
Yeah.
Or what? I forget how it was phrased because there was a chance for Jen to answer too, but it largely came to him as, "What have you done in the last few years?
What have you done for me lately?"
Yeah, it was kind of that, right? Like, yeah. What are the things that you're essentially most proud of? You know?
Yeah.
He said the tire burner, and he
a playground in Mifflinburg.
The playground came up a lot. And he called it the all-inclusive. I kept thinking, like, that's like an all-inclusive cruise. Like, you get drinks.
Man, a playground with a bar. Yeah. I assume he means it's handicapped accessible.
That's what I thought, too. And I wondered if it really was just inclusive or all-inclusive. Anyway, so that was the second thing. And then the other thing was signing this bill about, the
HB 2016
action thing, right? So, in my mind, I'm thinking, boy, convenient move for him. That is like he can just keep saying, I just did this. Mm-hmm. So, and mm-hmm. I thought he played it really well when he said, like, hey, the same women that that I signed that with had a fundraiser at their house for my opponent, right? And it's because I believe in the issues, right? He played it real well.
You think so? I thought he sounded a little miffed.
Find him miffed, but I feel like in my mind, I kept thinking, boy, is that genuine? Like, did he do it because he thought it was the right thing, or did he do it because he realized that this moment that could really help him? And when it came back to Jen, she actually sort of put it that way.
She did.
And
I think she was probably really uncomfortable doing that.
Put people off around on my side. They were that really, And I think she seemed so her.
She basically kind of said, like,
comfort came through. And
it did.
She didn't come
off very clean. Because she kind of said, I want to assume the best about people, but maybe you did this because, but what about, and she went back to the long gun bill.
Yeah,
that
right.
And I the thing is, we said this earlier, like, Fred wasn't going to convince me. Jen wasn't going to convince the guy sitting next to you, or I have it sitting next to a Fred supporter who I think seemed to me to be studiously trying to avoid eye contact with me. At one point I was like, well, they really packed us in here because I'm a big guy. And he was like, not going to, talk.
Were you wearing buttons or did he just make assumptions?
He probably made assumptions, but I am wearing my All or Welcome in Lewisburg button, which is not, unless you know what it means, it just looks like I like Lewisburg. You have to know it's for the non-discrimination human relations ordinance. Mm-hmm. No, and I decided not to wear a Jen button because I felt like I wanted to honor the idea of we're coming to this as citizens first. And I clapped for Fred politely. Mm-hmm. I forgot what I was going to say a minute ago. I was saying, like, and maybe this will be kind of where we wrap up, but like, the key thing is, I wasn't going to be convinced to vote for Fred. The guy next to me wasn't going to be convinced to vote for Jen. The thing is to turn out, for people who are on the fence, how does this help Fred? If he can convince people on the fence or convince more people to turn out who already like him. And the same is true for Jen. Mm-hmm. And so the crowd in the audience didn't matter a lot. What mattered was the media coverage. Right?
Right.
Because if we assume that probably, I think it's safe to say almost no one to no one in that room was going to change their mind.
Right.
Do you agree with that?
I do. Yeah. I do, actually. Yeah. I think that the people who came out tonight
were
largely passionate about their side.
So it's interesting. And we all turned out. And I turned out because I was like, of course I have to support Jen. Mm-hmm. But I had no expectation I was going to talk to somebody that I could convince. Like, if I really wanted to help Jen, I should have spent an hour and a half calling undecided voters and talking to them.
Right. Even though it had to be enough. The room from where I was sitting was...
I'm just sort of
ruminating. I felt a little unsafe.
Yeah.
It just felt a little, aggressive over by... In a weird, not super loud and
it would have been nice,
violent way, but it did feel a little bit.
It would have been nice to have somebody who was accidentally on the other side and if they had a similar experience.
Because they might have had the same experience.
Maybe not.
So from the perspective of being Jen as a candidate, I think having people there that were responding positively probably helped a lot, right? So
helped her...
Just to communicate and feel like she had support up there, right?
Yeah.
And that matters.
But that matters
in the press coverage. Because
the press coverage. That's right. Yes, right. So
you're
getting back to should I go?
Yeah.
In a very narrow way, what's the best thing I can do for Jen? Is it to canvas for an hour and a half tonight or do phone calls or to go to this? Yeah. Going to this helped because she did better knowing she had a lot of support. Mm-hmm. But how much media coverage is there, right? Mm-hmm. I don't mean how much media coverage. The media coverage was probably pretty good. I saw the reporter from the Daily Item, from the Standard Journal, Mark Lawrence from WK
was there.
KOK was there. I don't think there was any TV.
Yeah.
Sorry, what I mean to say is how many people are going to get to have seen part of the debate or highlights, given what people spend their time on and how they get information.
Yeah, right.
Right. So how many people read the Daily Item? You know, these other things. So
I'm kind of like just looking forward to seeing this stuff come out tomorrow and seeing what they use. Right. So I thought about that a lot tonight. You know, which of these quotes are going to be the ones that turn up in the stories?
Not that you or I have a lot of time. We could do a sequel podcast where we look at the coverage and compare it to our experience.
It would be kind
of
fun.
That would actually be kind of fun. Yeah, all right, we'll put that on the. Maybe we'll do that. I have a long list of possible episodes.
is that and what? And you've added?
Did you have it? Yeah, I just added that in my head, and I'll add it later. Was this fun? Did you have a good time?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I like talking about this stuff.
Yeah, you do. You're good at it.
Oh yeah, thanks. You're pretty good at it too. I mean, really, with complex issues and breaking them down.
Thank you.
With sports analogies.
I mean, I don't want to toot. Thank you. I don't want to toot my own horn or, you know, mix metaphors while I, you know, play a silent symphony. I don't know. I mean, this is our second year, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is episode 50.
Wow.
So I've done this a little bit.
That's
yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Taylor, who was written off the show but makes guest appearances.
So you didn't kill his character off.
No, I didn't kill his character off. He said that written off the show, which really cracked me up. Yeah. He had this good idea, which we haven't done yet, but to go back and re-listen to our very first and have him and me and Chip, who was one of the other founders, mm-hmm. do a like 3 or 4 minute just solo, like looking back. Because I have no memories about what we talked about the first time. Like zero memories. But yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Chris, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for putting the debate up on Facebook. That's how I heard about it.
Actually. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, there you go. Facebook. Mm-hmm. We live and die by it.
Microblogging.
It's, yeah. Microblogging for idiots. okay, I'm an idiot. Well, you know,
you reached me.
Hey. I guess we're in the basket of the deplorables. All right. Town, Lords Valley, Town, Doyle's Town, Downingtown, Cherry Valley, Plain Grove, Mill Grove, Mechanics Grove, Swissvale, Ferndale, Carbondale, Monongahela. Oh, well, I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I cross the valley, stare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.